He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is Boston Public Radio.
89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1 Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Here with us in Studio 3 to take on the moral dilemmas of the day are Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. Reverend Irene Monroe is a syndicated columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Good to see you both.
Thanks for having us back.
Great to be here.
So in the wake of this Ferguson thing, of this Staten Island disaster, I saw a poll in the last 24 hours, which I have to say shocked me. This part didn't surprise me so much. 53% of all Americans say that race relations are worse in the 6 years since President Obama took over. 45% of black people in America say race relations are worse since the time that Obama took over. Starting with you, Emmett Price, are you surprised by at least the latter number?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, you, how many other presidencies have you had general lay people calling the president an ape and, you know, satirical cartoons that are just, I mean, you don't have to like him, but to disrespect him in open air like that and think that you can get away with it. So it creates this resentment on a number of sides. And then I think things are just really bad, really, really bad.
So do you think this number, the 45%, if this had not come after Ferguson and had not come after Staten Island, I'm assuming we'd agree the number would be a lot lower.
I think the number would be lower. Yeah, no question about that.
Yeah, I think a black president has annoyed an awful lot of people. I mean, I think that's fairly clear.
By virtue of him being black.
By him being black, and not his politics, but by him being black.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that his numbers will go down with a certain white population because now he's speaking up on this issue. You know, as a president that didn't want to get enmeshed in these politics around race, here he is. He has to, at this point, you know, speak up on this issue. The very interesting thing is, in an earlier segment, you were talking about, you know, Michael Brown's body being displayed. And so
Eric Garner.
Yeah. And the very interesting thing is it reminded me 59 years ago this past summer when Emmett Till was killed. Mm-hmm. And his mother deliberately had an open casket, which was really out of protocol, you know, in terms of funeral protocol, to show the horror and the exposure. So what has happened with social media? Social media has helped us, those who have been voiceless or have been perceived to be too sensitive around race. Social media has exposed, you know, this cancer, and it has metastasized in the way in which we see the tentacles of the protests all over the place.
Well, not only did she do the open casket, but they also made sure that the photograph of Emmett Till in the casket was published in Jet magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Which was huge.
How old was he?
13.
So what did you think? I'm interested to, what your take was on the Garner thing. Because on the one hand, when we had this conversation, I was saying, okay, I get it, because the whole issue is we have cameras now and we could see this guy getting basically killed by the cops and there was no indictment. On the other hand, I felt that there was a disrespect for
just
him.
A slab of meat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm
sorry.
Exactly.
I hate to say this, but it's almost like when you go to the butcher and you get a slab of, you know, whatever meat you have, you just slap it down. I just felt like that they didn't even see this as a human being. I think the quandary that I was in, I couldn't understand why the paramedic didn't do CPR. Particularly, there was some question about, did he have a pulse? Did he not have a pulse? And so it really disturbed me.
Well, it was a shock of knowing that they screwed up. I mean, there was a shock of, you know, not wanting to continue what had been an atrocity. For me, it was like a bad episode of Law and Order, right? So the first couple of minutes of Law and Order, something happens, you know, dun-dun, you know, and then they, for the rest of the 45 minutes or the 50 minutes, they kind of resolve it. And for me, watching that clip was no different. And so we have so been desensitized to humanity, so disrespectful of individuals' rights, and for his family who have to watch, his six children. Mm-hmm. Who have to watch this every time they turn on the television and hear people refer to their father as if they know him. We don't know Eric Garner, but we're talking about him like he's our neighbor or something like that.
But, you know, you can't disregard the rating aspect of it and the type of culture that we are today, that we like gory. We really do. I mean, I don't think we want to see blood. I don't think we want to see the beheading of an individual because we have not been sensitized or normalized that gruesomeness. But I do think that people want to see, and I think it can work. It has a double-edged sword in that it can work in highlighting the inequities in this society, but at the same time, it highlights how we have no respect for the dignity of a human life.
Yeah, I don't like it. I prefer
the showing at all, yeah, or the showing incessantly.
I don't like it. I think a photograph of the event would have been fine for me. I've watched the video
no,
twice.
No, I think you need to show
and
it.
And I don't want to see it because I mean, there's
you've watched the video only twice.
Only twice.
So you've chosen not to see
absolutely.
The video.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And is it because of the disrespect? What? Why?
One, there's no healing from that video. Two, it's absolutely insane because a lot of people are watching that now to substantiate whether he was a criminal or not, and to see if he actually put up a fight. Right. So that justifies why the officer did what he did. But, and so we're watching, waiting to see him, you know, not put his hands behind his back. And he's a huge guy. I mean, his hands were not necessarily going to go behind his back.
But that depends on the viewer. I think what it did, I mean, it's overkill. But I think what it did was it really does give voice and validity to a disenfranchised demographic group in our American country here who says this happens all the time. This happens all the time. So I think no, we need to see it. I think how often do we see it? At some point when 9/11 happened, we really had to just turn it off. I think ad nauseum. I think we're at that level of ad nauseum. The point now has been made. I think that even if we didn't see the video, I think that we would still continue to see the various
but
protests.
The question remains, who is the we, right? Who is the audience for this? And for people who see it every day, as you've mentioned, they don't need to see this on TV because they yeah. see it every day.
People that don't see it.
But you make the assumption. I mean, television viewing has really changed today. There was a time that you could say, well, we all watch 6 o'clock news and Walter Cronkite and these various, you know, pundits here. But people who have, we have different schedules so that they want to make sure. I don't know how much ratings is incorporated in this. That if you come home at 1 o'clock at night, you have the same video that someone at 6 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
I think that's too noble of a. when you see it nonstop yeah. on the same show,
well, you know what killed me? Suggests when they said at one point it's going to take us 6 of us to get us into the stretcher.
Yeah.
I mean, the man was, if not already dead, very close to death. And it just seemed, like you said, disrespectful.
Well, and what I heard? I heard in that, and it really comes after Michael Brown. Oh, another Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Okay. Another.
By the way, is it true? You know, I read somebody's great tweet this weekend, and I wish I could give him or her credit. The person who took the video was arrested, correct?
Yeah.
So
that's
the
right.
person who
indicted
took the video
by a grand jury.
Was
that's
indicted
right.
by a grand jury, and the cop is not indicted. Mm-hmm. So the demonstrations, CNN is the happiest it's been since the Malaysian airline went down. And maybe that's unkind, yeah. but essentially it's 24/7. And, you know, one of the things is somebody who in my earlier life used to engage in many demonstrations, I'm sitting watching and saying, you know, the vast majority of people in this country have really never seen a demonstration right. up close and personal. You right. see yeah. video of 100,000 people going to Washington
yeah. I thought it was
or
great.
400,000. In
great.
Many ways, it shows
well,
another side.
What's
the staying power of this
well,
thing?
Yeah.
I mean, how long does this last? I don't mean in terms of the media, even though that is a part of the staying power thing. How much of an attention span does the average disenfranchised protester have.
Right. See, that's just my point. Thank you. I mean, really, I think that what we see now is a lot of street theater, and there's a lot of momentum about it. And it reminded me of the Occupy movement, because I thought if anywhere there was going to be a shift around policy and attitudes and a connection from the street, you know, to Congress, I thought that certainly would do it. And so the thing that bothers me is that it's sort of like an octopus without a head or without a core. We have tentacles, meaning protests all over the place, but there isn't a core sort of infrastructure in the way that we saw sit-ins. I mean, they have die-ins, but the point is that if they didn't have a sit-in, this is, using a page from the 1960s civil rights movement, they had other strategies. And what we're seeing in Oakland really disturbs me, because with the violence, it dishonors not only, you know, the death of these young brothers that have died, but it also dishonors the integrity of the movement of what we're trying to, you know, promulgate here.
So we're you're looking at a 21st reality from a 20th century perspective, I think it's important to realize that these young people are at the helm, and we don't have access to the brain thinking and the think tanking of what's going on. This thing is moving fast on Facebook, on Twitter, social media, Instagram, and it's moved across the country in places where there were not these incidents. And these incidents will continue to happen. And so, unfortunately, the staying power would be the 12 people who were down at the White House earlier today. I mean, you know, it'd be smaller, you know, constituencies.
But what happens, Emmett? See, this is my concern. I mean, right now, and, you know, and for a lot of college kids, they're out of school or they're not engaging in studying for their finals. But what happens, you know, 3 and 4 months down the road? See, right now, weather is pretty good, even in New England, relatively speaking. But what happens, it's freezing out?
I don't think the onus is on the protesters to answer that. I think the onus is on the justice system and those who folks are protesting against to show some justice to answer that question.
Okay, so then what you're saying to me is that, well, we got to hope that Eric Holder and
we need
and
leaders.
Those, yeah,
I mean, by the way, one of the reasons I think Marjorie believes, and I do too, that the Occupy movement achieved something and that it changed the dialogue in this country.
But the
reason it fell apart, in my estimation, is there was no concrete agenda at the end of the rainbow.
Right,
after this brilliant staying power there, what is it exactly that we want? There was obviously a memo sent out at the cable news networks to the reporters saying, okay, reporters, go up to the most clueless protester and say, yes, yeah. Okay, what legislation right. do you, I don't know. Yeah. I'm here because I care about Eric Garner.
I don't mean to sound like Pollyanna here, but I think there's a huge change in awareness. I mean, the upside of seeing
poor
Eric.
Occupies your, oh, Eric Garner,
well,
okay.
Well, it Occupy, we didn't talk about 1% and 99% until they came
right.
along. We didn't
You're
talk
right.
about income inequality nonstop
that's right.
until
that's
they
right.
came along. So that's a change of perception, one thing. And I think the other thing is that it is really, as awful as that video was, it is hard to look at that and not think this guy was killed by the cops. So you have older people who might not be white people who may have been in denial about this, and then you have young people. And I think young people are in such a different place from where I was when I was mm-hmm. growing up. I mean, they have Rainbow Coalition friends. Mm-hmm. It's much
right.
different
mm-hmm.
than it was. And you saw so many white kids out there that I think really mm-hmm. said, this is awful. And I the awareness has changed.
White, Thai. Right?
Yes.
Indian?
Yes.
Everybody. I mean, you know, so it's not still the black
part of
and white
that,
paradigm.
I think, has a lot to do with that. In some ways, if you're a person of color, you've experienced some sort of policing and mistreatment, because if you're perceived to be Muslim, if you're perceived to be gay in certain parts of the United States. And that's why I think that the genius of this movement would be to tie policing to issues of you know, profiling Muslims, gays, black folks, tied to immigration, I think that you have a much wider net.
I just want to say that
a paradigm, and yes, it's old school, but it doesn't mean it should be discarded, that the way in which, you know, MLK brought together the March on Washington, you had contingents of folks with different issues, but with a common goal. And I don't see that. I just see silos.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I was deciding, should I bring up the same thing I bring up almost every week? And I'm going to do it, because you mentioned Martin Luther King, a huge figure leading a march. My greatest fear about how this thing dies on the vine mm-hmm. is on December 13th, in my opinion, one of the least respected civil rights leaders of our time
right.
is leading a march on Washington.
That's right.
And I think that white people...
He should step aside.
This is Al Sharpton, of course, her high school classmate. I'm sorry to keep saying that, but just for a frame of reference, I mean this sincerely.
White
people whose minds were cracked open by that video,
yeah.
even if you're right, Emmett, and mm-hmm. Enough is enough already, I think have them shut down by somebody who is, frankly, reviled in most circles. And we can have a discussion the other day why he sits with presidents and sits
with
mayors.
Yeah, I was going to say he was with
Barack Obama and Joe Biden the other day. Do you not – is that an unrealistic fear? That's going to be the highest profile by far part of this thing, at least in – in mid-December before the snows come.
So let's look at this. The whole protest movement has not been about profile, right? So Al's going to do what Al's going to do. And the family of the young man who was shot and killed last week in New York, I think his name was Akai or Gurley or whatever.
The guy on the steps, you mean?
Yeah. His family specifically said to Al Sharpton and his whole camp, don't come to the funeral.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They said, not come because
We
don't want you and your whole media camp. This service is for the family. So the point is that there are many people who are part of the protest who don't necessarily need to be in the whole march with Al and don't need to be at the White House with the president, right? I mean, so people are pushing for cameras and
a deterrent. See, this is my point. And I have to just say, you know, he is my homeboy. I like Al. I really do. I mean, you know, you play with somebody, you know, you beat them up, you know, you play, you know.
Did you beat them up?
Well,
I feel better about you already.
I mean, we teased it. We call him Fat Albert. I mean, you know what I mean? But he was
not so fat anymore.
Really. But I was a cute Chubsy Wubsy. Yes, he was back in the day. But nonetheless, as a kid.
Now.
But I just think that what we are missing is that while Al Sharpton is not a leader or a key figure in this. He's an important figure to the point that he is a deterrent for not only an older generation of folks, but also for a younger generation of folks.
Yeah, I mean, the civil rights movement, whether you deem it a success or not, was progressive because you had multiple constituencies who were doing it in different ways, and they continued to push the conversation towards that progress.
Yeah, but it looks at, I mean, but what you're ignoring is that the truth be told, that there is a lack of leadership in the African American community. I think that when you use ministers as leaders in a community, you have a problem.
Right,
number
but
one.
I'm with Marjorie's Rainbow Coalition. I'm not claiming this as an African American
issue.
No, but
I got to hold it there for a second because we only have 2 minutes left. And by the way, we are skipping 1 week for those who tuned in. You have to wait a week. Because we want to ask you a question.
Hold on to your notes.
About high-profile guy, which we're going to talk to listeners about in a couple of minutes. Mark Wahlberg is seeking a pardon. And for those of us who knew virtually nothing about his pre-Marky Mark, pre-acting history, he was convicted of hitting a Vietnamese guy over the head with a 5-foot-long stick, did 45 days in jail. He settled, and correct me if I'm wrong, any of you, settled a complaint around throwing rocks at young black kids, hurling racial epithets at them.
Elementary school kids.
There was no 9-year-olds and that sort of thing.
And the woman is still traumatized.
So it appears the woman moved to Georgia or something.
That's right.
What's your take on what should happen with this, I think, rather surprising request, because I'm not quite clear why he's even seeking it. Irene Monroe.
Well, you know, I liked what Martha Coakley said in the previous segment. You know, just because you're famous and rich doesn't mean that you get a pass.
Yeah.
I think this is all about, really, about, you know, Mark, because he's, unlike many, you know, felons, he's integrated back into mainstream society. I think he needs to do two things that I think would really show some sign
What's
of contrition,
that?
Because I think he's following this sort of model of confession and absolution, and then he needs to then move from absolution to accountability. I think, number one, that he certainly needs to go and apologize to the folks, because the point is that very much if he gets a pardon, he will re-injure these folks. But the second thing is that I really think that he needs to work with the criminal system around how to integrate and use his power as an ex-felon, because once you're a felon, you can vote, you have difficulty getting a job, and his whole movement around this is because he wants liquor license for his 27 chains that he's growing here in the United States and in Toronto. So my point is that I'm not upset that he wants to advance his cause, but if he's going to do it that it's really done for a greater good. So I don't think, and I also think that it's a bad paradigm to set up, like, you know, you do something and you get pardoned by the state. No, you did something, and this was a crime. But what it should show younger generations, know that you don't get pardoned. There's a sense of accountability, but there is some rehab, because this is what we will do with ex-felons.
I think we may have common ground for one of the rare moments with you and Emmett Price. Is that correct, Emmett, or no?
No, because I think this is so silly, and I think my college students would say this is such a first world problem. I mean, you know, you have, I mean, you know, just to keep the same idea here, I have some students who were arrested at the protest last Thursday. Give them pardons for actually practicing what we teach
civil
in
disobedience,
school,
yeah.
Right? Give them pardons, right? And there's so many other people who have done infractions 20, 25 years ago who are still struggling to get jobs, struggling to get access to health care and all kind of stuff. Hook them up if we're going to look for people to hook up. So my man is, he's doing very well.
And will continue to do so.
Yeah, this is just
such
a first world
problem. But I have to say, though, I am a fan of his. I didn't know.
Fighter?
Yeah, really. I didn't know about his racist history. I really didn't. But the one thing I have to say, he does rival Beckham in Calvin Klein. He really he has the best butt for a white boy. I must say,
you surprise
really.
Every week.
Absolutely,
she gives the Pope a two. She's going to give Marky Mark a five.
Oh, what is
no,
this?
I give him a 10 for that butt.
Okay. Thank you very
you
much.
It's great to see you.
Pope Watch delayed for 1 week. Reverend Irene Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist. You can find her at the Huffington Post and at Bay Windows. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. His latest book is "The Black Church and Hip Hop Culture Toward Bridging the Generation." Divide. They join us every Monday for All Revved Up. Thank you guys for being here. Up next, we're going to ask you what we just asked the reverends about Mark Wahlberg. Would pardoning him be a pardon for racism? 877-301-8970. Keep your dial on 897 WGBH.